Karina Atkins joined us last month just to talk about part one of an incredible four-part series that ran in the Tribune, all about farming in Illinois, the future, climate change, and all sorts of stuff, and really coming at it from a lot of different angles. I really enjoyed reading through it. It took a lot of time, Karina, but it probably took a lot longer to write. Thanks for coming back on again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back.
The part two was about crop insurance and how it obviously costs taxpayers a lot of money. I say obviously, but actually, let's back up a little bit. Crop insurance for farmers, is that done through private companies, then backed by the federal government? What is this public-private relationship of crop insurance, broadly speaking?
Yeah, so it's a public-private partnership in which the federal government subsidizes about 60% of a farmer's premium that's paid to an insurance company. And so the taxpayer dollars are used to cover subsidies. And there are 12 federally approved crop insurance providers who farmers can go to get insurance through and have a relationship with the government that allows them to receive those subsidies from the government.
So the subsidies from the government help pay the premium on the front end. Does the government come and help out on the back end if there's a catastrophic situation?
Yeah, so they pay administrative and overhead fees to the 12 federally approved crop insurance companies as well and take on a bit of the risk on the back end.
The justification for all of us taxpayers paying for it, I think, is one that I think a lot of people will get behind, right? The farmers feed the country or feed the livestock that feed the country, right? This is, in most people's views, part of what makes our system and our agriculture strong, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the idea behind a federally subsidized crop insurance program is farmers are assuming quite a bit of risk when they decide to farm as their main form of livelihood. A natural disaster could come and wipe away their crops or take away their animals. They're kind of just at the whim of nature. And so in order to kind of help support farmers who are taking these risks and dealing with a lot of elements that are out of their control, crop insurance is subsidized by the federal government. Now, when we think about climate change and an increase in natural disasters that are fueled by climate change, that starts to kind of put a wrench in crop insurance and how sustainable it is, because payouts may increase.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't even think of this aspect of crop insurance. The limited number of crops that companies will offer insurance on, kind of feeding into the cyclical nature of climate change and agriculture as a whole. Kind of break this down step by step for us about why this limit on the number of crops that are insured usually can feed back into this problem.
Yeah, insurance companies want to make sure that they're not going to lose money, right? And that they're providing policies to a large enough population that on the whole, once all the payouts are made and everything's said and done, they're going to come out profitable. And so when we think about Illinois and the series kind of about why are there so many corn and soybeans in Illinois, it is much easier for a farmer to get crop insurance for corn and soybeans because we know that corn and soybeans grow wonderfully in the state. And also, there's lots of people growing them. And so then you have a large population of which to insure and make sure that kind of risk is spread out against amongst a lot of different people. And so that kind of creates a self-perpetuating cycle where corn and soybeans are what gets insurance, so it's what farmers grow because so many farmers gets more, and there's more opportunities to be insured for it, and so on and so forth. And so it's historically been really hard for farmers who want to grow anything but corn and soybeans to get policies in the state of Illinois. And because they can't get crop insurance policies, sometimes they're less willing to assume the risk that it would take to grow other types of produce.
And then broadly speaking, crop insurance values, or I should say benefits, maybe is not the right word either, but is geared towards more of the big corporate farmers versus smaller independent farmers who might be more willing, as we talked about in part one, to take risks or try new things or try different crops. Then now the crop insurance is not going to them as much as it is to the big corporations. And it just kind of feeds that problem too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because insurance companies want to make sure that they're or like to insure big farms who are going to pay high premiums and also inherently have a little bit more of a security blanket because, you know, if one field fails, the other 10 fields or whatever could potentially do well and still let them turn a profit and they'd need less of a payout versus when you're dealing with a small family farm on a small plot of land, you have less wiggle room to make mistakes and also just upfront going to have to pay a smaller premium because you're not insuring as much revenue.
We got about a minute left. What is a potential solution to this? We don't have a new farm bill yet. Could that be thrown in there, or is it about encouraging insurers, to insure more than four crops across the country? Like, what do farmers want here?
Yeah, I think really when you talk to farmers, they want crop insurance reforms in the farm bill. They want crop insurance to stay in the farm bill, but there's also room to bolster crop insurance so that it supports smaller farmers. And as you mentioned, the farm bill has been delayed because of partisan gridlock in Congress, but it's really the farm bill is what I'm hearing from farmers.
Karina, we appreciate your time. We'll talk about another month or so about part three. Thanks for spreading this out over time with us. We appreciate it.